Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 59, and I'm Libya, your host.
I'm Tom from LA.
I'm Allison from LA.
I'm Josh from LA.
I'm Marcia from LA.
And to be a little different, I'm Ronnie from Vegas.
Woohoo! Nice. Yay! We have a full house this week. Full house. Let's go quickly with the news because we have a lot of really big shows to talk about this week. First up is that the shows Chaos and the Paul Reisner Show were both canceled, one within three episodes and one within two, which is impressive how quickly that cancellation bar came down on their heads. I have to say I did watch Chaos and I thought it was mediocre, so I'm not like crying in my soup or anything about that. I think my main thing about the Paul Reisner Show is I was like, Reiser, thank you. Mm-hmm. They couldn't come up with a name for the show, so to me, that's already, like, it's gone.
If you can't... I saw the first 15 minutes, it hurt so much I turned it off.
Oh. Yes, I believe.
I didn't even bother because it was the Paul Reiser Show.
I was like, come up with a name for the show. Come on.
I used to love Mad About You, but I didn't even try. Like you said, because there's nothing to attract me to even look at it.
Right.
Well, the reviews were terrible.
It tried to be Men of a Certain Age, and it sucked. Because it was so depressing and so boring that nobody would care.
Well,
so, like Men of a Certain Age.
I like Men of a Certain Age.
All right. Let's move on to the next piece of news, which is... Game of Thrones has already been picked up for season two officially by HBO. So we can all sit back and enjoy the rest of the season without worrying about anything. That's the best news I've had in a while for cancellation wise. All right, let's kick this off with the series premiere of Game of Thrones. And I just do a survey. How many people here in the podcast have read the books? I'm raising my hand. Me.
My hand is down.
My hand is down.
I am reading the books. I am almost done the first one.
Okay. So, I'm curious about the...
I was going to say, I didn't do either, so I'm sorry.
Oh, boo. You need to watch that show. It's mandatory for this podcast. All right.
Go to your room.
But I'm curious.
In my room.
Well, to be fair, she did want to be different.
Okay.
Actually, that's true.
So I'm curious about the people who have not read the book and have no knowledge of the characters and watching this fresh. What did you guys think?
That would be me.
Me too, yeah.
I would like it. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought my biggest lesson learned from the pilot was... If you're blonde, you're probably evil.
Okay. What do you get, Marcia?
I decided after the first 10 minutes to not care about anybody's names, that I would just figure it out as it goes along. I was just happy when I figured out who was the son of which and who was the illegitimate bastard. That took a while figuring out. But otherwise, I enjoyed it. I liked it. It was so... intricate. It was what, five different stories, and I'm thinking, oh yes, I can have a good show for a change.
Yeah, it does not slow down for the people who are slow in the class. That's true.
I thought I was going to be so different by, you know, coming to this with virgin eyes. You know, I thought everybody else was going to have read the books, and instead, you know, obviously I'm just one of a group who haven't seen it, who have not read the books before. But I loved it. I thought it was terrific. You know, I can't sit here and say, this does not have perfect fidelity to the books, or this is fantastically like the books, or anything like that. I'm just coming to it from the perspective of a viewer who wants a good story. And so far, that's exactly what they're delivering. They're delivering a terrific story. I have to say that the only thing that's confusing me is that the weather is a little weird. I mean, I was trying to put together the first two scenes, because the very first thing that we see is this you know, glacial tundra with this huge glacial wall a mile high, and then the very next thing that we see is that this guy manages to run from this topography all the way to this castle on rolling hillsides, and I'm trying to figure out how the two can be so close together. He can run from one to the other overnight.
And he didn't do it overnight, but
it wasn't overnight.
It looked like overnight, though. I mean, I guess if you read the books, maybe you'd find out that it wasn't. But they don't explain it.
Well, they tried to show. Well, that's the thing is they're not. One thing I do like about the show is they're not explaining stuff. You have to figure it out. One thing is that
the book is kind of the same way.
Yeah, the wall is not a glacial wall. It's a man built wall. First of all,
okay.
So that wall. And you're right about the weather is different. In that world, weather is different in that seasons last for years. And they have actually just come off of a summer that's been like 10 years long or something like that. So seasons are different. But where he was, they showed a map at the beginning. Like when the show opens, the opening credits, they show.
Really, really fascinating to watch. I loved that.
Right. And so from that map, which you're supposed to, if you actually had it in front of you, that wall is the northernmost edge of the map. That's like the top of the kingdom, and that wall separates the seven kingdoms from basically barbarian hordes kind of deal. Mm-hmm. So
it's kind of considered the edge of the world.
Yes, right. And that
I got that.
And that area is very wintry, glaciary. You know that area always looks like that. As you go further south, the first kingdom you come to is the Starks, where the main characters are. And their area is usually a little snowish, wintry. But then once you get to, like, King's Landing, then it's all heat and wet, you know, it's all pretty and all of that.
And that part I got. It was just the confusion because I figured, you know, in the book they probably make this clear where things are exactly located and how long it takes to get from place to place. But it wasn't really clear in the show, and that was the only thing that I was kind of iffy about. But the rest of it, I'm really loving, and I love the way the characters are being delineated. And other than the all bad blonde people thing, and apparently the more blonde you are, the more evil you are, because the white-haired guy is really vicious.
Yes, but...
Oh, God, yes.
But on the defense of...
He dies soon.
On the defense of the blonde people, the little sister who gets married, she's not evil, and she's very blonde.
I'm still reading the book, but where I am now, she's freaking awesome.
Yeah, she is.
That's good. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, she's probably either going to be so victimized that she dies soon, or she's going to come into her own and kick everybody's ass.
She's going to come into her own.
The latter.
Yes.
Okay. In a big way.
I figured it was you know, going to go one way or the other. And certainly I'm having a good time looking at Jason Momoa not wearing a lot of stuff.
Conan!
That's always lots of fun.
Seriously, perfect casting choice for Khal Drogo. Okay.
Yeah. What do you think, Josh, since you have read... You've read as far as the first episode has gone, obviously, so what did you think?
Oh, God, yeah. I loved it. Like, it was... For me, reading the books and having pictured all this in my head, now I started reading it after they announced the show was being done, so I sort of had a little bit of a vision of it in my head from the previews, but seeing it all come together was just beautiful. And the way they build up the characters and the way they portrayed them, like, there's such depth to them in the book, and they really bring it out very subtly in the performances, and I just love that.
I have to say that because there are so many characters, just the million characters, because there's all the kings and queens and the dukes and whatever you have to know, I have to say it does make an advantage of reading the books, because I know as soon as the person comes on screen, I know who they are. So I don't have to spend time trying to figure that out. But I heard, by the way, they have a cheat sheet over at...
they do?
On Hollywood, a Hollywood Reporter, they have a little page called Who's Who on Game of Thrones to teach you... who all the characters are.
And HBO has actually put together a really cool interactive guide to everything on their website.
They tend to do that with all their series. Yeah, those are always very useful.
So can I just give HBO props for, they've got several hit shows on, but they're smart, unlike the networks, to start grooming the next big hit instead of being like NBC where, oh my gosh, our hits are all gone, we've got nothing. You know, True Blood is still going strong. Boardwalk Empire just started, and they're smart. Game of Thrones comes out. So, you know, the ratings were good. They'll get stronger. But those development people were smart, unlike these network twits.
Well, the thing is, HBO...
Well, HBO and Showtime both have a tendency to keep them going through the pipeline, and that's wonderful. So there's always something that is worth watching.
And they actually rarely have a flop, because they spend so much effort on making sure that the storyline, and they only take the good stuff. They take the cream of the crop anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's the thing, they actually care about quality.
Right.
They really do.
And I also have to say their advertising is very well done. Like, they have the ad campaign they did for Game of Thrones really drew you in, I felt.
Right. I think because of the awareness, which is so high, everybody knew that it was on. Even if you weren't watching it, you knew that it was happening. So that's thumbs up.
But they delivered. Unlike, I mean, look at the event where we knew it was coming, but it came and nobody cared.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
All right. Any other comments about Game of Thrones? Because I didn't comment. Duh.
Yeah, you didn't comment.
I got everybody else's ideas. Well, I have to say, because I have read the book, I was super excited about it, so my level of anticipation was higher than most, and it delivered, like, everything that because I read the book, like, when it came out, like, 10 years ago. Well, it actually came out longer than that, but I read it when I was in college, and I loved it back then, and everything that I pictured in my head came on the screen. So far, I am very happy. There's a couple of little things that, like the relationship between Drago and, Daenerys.
Daenerys. Mm.
In the books, it's a less violent relationship. It's a little more, he's a little bit nicer of a guy in the books. And so, on the show, he's very just kind of minimalist, grunting, barbarian guy, but he's really smart, and so far they haven't really shown that. So, and
I have a feeling we'll be seeing more of that as it goes along.
That's true, but I just didn't like how they introduced the two characters as far as them and their intimate relationship. I wasn't happy about that.
I agree. The wedding night scene, I felt in the book, it felt more tender, even though it was essentially the same sort of thing.
Yeah, and because, one, their relationship is actually one of my favorites, and it's kind of hard to explain that to somebody who's only seen the show. I'm like, it looks really bad, but yeah, you're going to like it later. Like, no, it's hard to explain that. So other than that, I thought everything else was pretty good, and I think that the casting for Tyrion especially is unbelievable.
Seriously, Peter Dinklage is the only person who could have played Tyrion. In my mind.
Yeah, I mean, he knocked it out of the park. And
he does. He carries off that character with a tremendous amount of dignity.
Right.
And you could see that character going another way entirely and just being ridiculous.
Right.
And he seems just really, you could see the underlying intelligence in the character.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, in the book, that's exactly what Tyrion is. And if you played it any other way, it wouldn't have worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like Tyrion is probably one of my favorite characters in the book.
Yeah. I agree.
So I'm so glad that they're like doing that right.
Okay, well, we will be talking about Game of Thrones as far as I'm concerned every week until it's over.
The next 9 weeks.
Yes, because I love it. So, but let's move on because we have all these other new shows to talk about. The next thing is there's a third episode of The Killing. Who else saw that?
I did.
That's it. All right. Well, quickly, the one thing I do like about The Killing is that because we're solving this case so slowly, we're getting to know these characters really, really well. And only thing is, I think at last week I said my prediction on who I thought the killer was. And this week they've put more guilt on that person. At least I think so.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Yeah, so, and I do like, I like the fact that, what's his name? The guy that got fired? He's basically, they were like, he's the spy for the campaign.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
Yeah, and so they fired
him. He's actually a double agent.
Right. I thought that was pretty cool. I was like, you didn't believe it, and you're sending him in as a spy. That's brilliant. So I like the fact that the guy, what is the guy's name? Richard? Is that his name? Somebody campaign.
I think Richmond, I think.
Richmond campaign. I like that he's smart.
Billy Campbell's character.
Yeah. And I like that he's smart. But they've now introduced a new suspect because at the end of the last episode, they made you think it was the two kids, which I was pretty sure it wasn't.
Oh, no, that's a mistake.
It was very obvious that it wasn't them. And it was basically the reveal was, you know, we had the tape showing the guys having sex with her. And you're like, obviously it's them. But when you...
It's actually her friend dressed up as her.
Right, which was weird. But you're like, all right, why would your friend dress up as you? Okay. But
which,
that...
there was one thing that sort of bugged me, because they go to that scene, or they go to where it happened down in the basement, and, all... they see blood smeared all over the walls.
Yeah, so who the heck was bleeding all over the place?
Well, what they say is that the girl is subject to nosebleeds. And I'm like, that much?
Yeah, she's dead at this point, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a little ridiculous that there's that much blood all over the place. But so I thought that was like, I felt like that was a little cheating. And the suspect they've introduced this week, I sort of suspected him and didn't, in that somebody was like, they asked him about her and his relationship with her, and he was very quick. He was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Are you suggesting some sort of, you know, bad relationship? And he was very defensive, and I was like, well, that's weird. And so this week you find out that she was sleeping with her teacher.
Yeah. I sort of like feel like he can't be the killer because they revealed that too quickly.
Exactly. And I don't think he's a killer. I think his big secret, because you could tell he was hiding something.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Obviously, the thing he's hiding is that he was sleeping with his student.
Well, yeah.
And, I mean, just flat, I get why he's hiding, and also that would make him a suspect, so he's trying to be mum. But I'm like, dude, you wrote her love letters. Come on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that he's...
One thing I need to just say right now is I love the parents in this.
They are
fantastic.
I agree. The parents are really great.
I think one of the brilliant things about the show is that it does focus on the family, because most other shows, you only see the family if there's somebody who's a suspect.
Right.
And this one is showing you the impact of a human life lost.
Right. And how each one of them is reacting. And I think the dad is going off the deep end with the borrowing, because the funeral is going to be like $5,000 and they don't have the money. So he's basically borrowing the money from like a bookie or whatever, or something from his past that he doesn't want to talk about.
He's like clearly involved in some sort of organized crime thing.
Well, he used
that he's trying to get out of.
Well, no, he's been out of it. Like since he's had his family, he's been out of it, but he needs the money to bury his daughter. And so that's the thing that just, you know, breaks your heart.
Right, yeah.
So he gets back in with them to borrow the money so he can bury his daughter properly. And that's just like...
And that's not going to bite him later.
So anyway, I thought the third episode was not as good as the first two, because I really feel like... I felt like it was a little cheap how they got the kids out of it. And then introducing the teacher as the possible bad guy, I don't believe it. So I'm like, come on, let's go to the next... I'm just like, all right, what's the next episode?
Okay.
And who's the next suspect?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
But I'm still liking it. I hate the partner. I want to punch him so much, but...
Oh, yes. I hate him a lot, too. So I don't know where they were trying to go with him.
I think we're supposed to hate the partner.
Well,
Peter
really
likes
him. I
know we're supposed to hate him, but good God.
Peter really likes him. He thinks he's funny. And I'm like, I don't think
he's
funny.
There's something about him that just, like, grates you.
Yes.
But I think...
Yeah.
I think they did that intentionally, and I'm hoping that pays off somewhere.
No, I don't think it's necessarily going to pay off. I mean,
I'm kind of hoping it pays off somewhere too, but I doubt it will.
Well, because
just like he's such a grating, annoying character.
Yes.
Well, he just seems kind of sleazy.
He is sleazy.
Oh, he's way sleazy.
Yeah, so he gives me the creeps. Anyway, all right. You guys said you wanted to talk about the Borg guy. How do you say?
Borgias.
All right, quickly tell me, why should I be watching that show?
Because it's an awesome show. That's why. And it stars Jeremy Irons. How can you not love something that stars Jeremy Irons?
I do like Jeremy Irons. Give me something else.
But it's wonderful. It's an historical drama. It's sort of like The Godfather, but in the 15th century. It is about the family of the Borgias, who were a leading family in Italy in the 15th
in
century.
Rome,
In Rome. Rodrigo Borgia was elevated to Pope, to become Pope during that period of time. And they were kind of like, despite the fact that he was Pope, or maybe because of the fact that he was Pope, they were kind of like a crime family, and they really ran Italy, or a portion of Italy, during that period of time. They were notorious. They had a horrible reputation, but they were extremely powerful. And they really kind of ran things. And so this show covers what happened during that period of time, and it's just, it's beautifully mounted. It's gorgeous to watch. The acting is fabulous from everyone, really, and it's tremendously fun to watch Jeremy Irons playing Rodrigo Borgia, because he just sinks his teeth into it and loves every minute of it, and it's tremendously fun and wonderfully done.
Is this on Showtime or
Showtime?
Okay,
this is Showtime show. Yeah, I agree with Allison. It's I haven't watched this week's episode yet, but what I've seen so far,
it's good.
I've been really enjoying it. I love the characters. Even though, like, the whole thing with Cesare and Lucrezia kind of, like, gets under my skin because it's so, like, incestuous.
Yeah, it's supposed to just be skirting the edges of that. And the actor playing Cesare is just wonderful. In fact, both of the actors, the one playing Cesare and Lucrezia, are fantastic in their roles.
Yeah. And Juan, the guy who plays Juan Borgia, he's just, like, incredibly, awesomely evil.
He is. You don't get to see as much of him, unfortunately. Although I think in the episode coming up, we're going to be seeing more.
Okay, cool.
Which is good. But, they're all the ones playing the siblings are terrific. And it really is like The Godfather. I mean, and they stress, actually, that they're kind of what The Godfather was based on.
Yeah, I mean, the tagline for it is the original crime family.
Yeah, exactly. And in the making of special, they go into detail as to how, you know, they were all the various characters were the blueprints on which the various characters in The Godfather, you know. Okay.
Yeah, and you can totally see that.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I need to wrap this up. So,
okay.
Yes, thumbs
but
up?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely
thumbs
watch.
Up. Watch it.
Definitely. I'm sure that they're going to be doing their catch-up specials where they do marathons, you know, of the earlier shows. And absolutely, when they do it, make a point of watching it so you can catch up and watch the whole series, because it's so worth it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're moving on to Monday, so the next show we're talking about is House. And normally, I mean, sometimes I can skip House, sometimes not, but I felt like this week I needed to give it at least a minute because we have...
It was Masters last episode.
Well, yes, exactly my point. and it was an all-Masters episode, and we got to see everything from her point of view, and she was way more neurotic than I thought she was. which was really good. I thought that they did a really good job of showing her character. And I'm really sad to see her leave because I have to say I like her better than 13, truthfully.
Yeah.
Because she's so different than
unfortunately,
the rest
that's kind of why she was there. She was a place marker for 13 until she came back again.
Yeah. But I think she was a better character.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually.
It took me a while to warm up to Masters, but I did, and now I'm very sad to see her go.
Yeah.
That's Jennifer Arcadia.
Yeah, okay. And I feel like House Broker. Like, he had, not only did he, she leaves at the end, but she's broken. She's like...
Oh, yeah.
She basically pulled one of his classic maneuvers, and after she did it, she was racked with so much guilt that... She's like, I can't be part of your department anymore, and she doesn't know if she's going to be a surgeon, and she basically doesn't know what she's going to do now.
Well, after what she did, I couldn't believe that she wasn't going to be sued for malpractice.
Well,
yeah,
nobody
really.
Knows
she,
that
where she went was really, really far.
Yeah, but nobody knows that she did it.
She announced it. That's what I couldn't believe. No one would have known she did it if she hadn't walked into the room and said, "Hi, I just did this."
Well, she only told the people who work on House Department. They're so used to keeping secrets, they're not going to tell anybody. House does this crap all the time. You know,
yeah,
so
yeah, and they've done worse.
Yeah,
that's
true. So they're all not talking. So she's fine. She's not going to lose her medical license because the family doesn't know that she lied. That's the important part.
Yeah.
But she actually did save the girl's life because they found out the cancer did spread.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
So,
but you know the way she went about it is like I said, if anyone ever finds out, if they dig a little deeper, they can actually find out what she did, and she, you know, that's a malpractice suit.
Yeah, it's malpractice waiting to happen, but I don't think that's the reason why she's like doesn't know what she's gonna do with her career. It's more
it's the trauma of having done it.
Right.
Yeah.
I saw it differently.
Say again.
Okay, I saw it differently. I saw at the end that she was kind of smiling. I think this might be the first time that she's actually going to choose what she wants to do without thinking that she has to always do what is right. And she's always second-guessing herself, that, am I doing the right thing? I have to be the good person. I have to always do this. I always have to do that. It's like she just realized, I have choices, and I'm now going to choose what I want to do. She may not stay in medicine. She may but do something else. But that last few seconds on her face, I took it as, I'm now going to have freedom to choose what I want to do. I now realize I have choice.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's a good different perspective. I like it.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I did sort of think that, but I was so focused on like all the stuff that happened in the episode that didn't even really register for me. But you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a very good episode. I thought House has, sometimes House is hit or miss, and this one was definitely a hit. So thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, next up, I want to talk about Stargate Universe. This was part one of a two-parter. Did you see it?
Nope.
And it was a whole time travel thing where it basically harks back to several episodes ago where they got in some sort of weird time loop and there were two versions of the ship, of the Destiny, and it looked like everybody on the first ship all were killed. Except that now we find out they weren't all killed. They actually ended up going through a Stargate like several thousand years in the past.
About 2,000 years.
Right. And so they basically, that version of themselves, establish a civilization and have all these kids and spread out through the galaxy or whatever. And they come to some planet and they're like, you guys are the ancestors. And they're like, say what now? So, I thought
they even have a religious schism, and one of which is called Futura, which I love.
Oh, I died with the Futura.
Yeah, Futura. They were like, it's a font. How can you name a religion after a font? It was so great. And then the people on the other side, they thought that Rush was the devil that can steal your soul.
I love that when they see Rush on the bridge and like they all freeze, like, oh my god, we're in a room with the devil.
Yeah, they all freeze, they put their heads down like he's not gonna see them. Oh man. And he was just like, what is with you freaks? he just left the bridge.
And of course Rush has nothing to do with, doesn't want anything to do with this at all.
Oh man, but the thing that's great, it brings up the moral question too, because they're in the position to help the people, these people, and some of them feel obligated because they're their descendants. They're like, genetically, these are like our grandchildren or whatever, so we should help them. And because they look up to them as the ancestors, as the like heroes that the legend has said will return and save us, they kind of feel obligated to help them. Yet, at the same time, they're at the brink of their supplies, so what do they do?
They can't help them, yeah.
Right, I mean, they're not coming back strong.
They can do themselves to try to help them, that's the thing.
Right.
And I like that there was that twist.
What twist, Ronnie?
I like there was that twist that, you know, here they are, they're back, but yet they're on the brink of their own, you know, sort of calamities themselves. So as much as they'd like to help them, they really can't, given the circumstances. And then the drones, you know, made it so that way there was no question about it because the drones came in. So I think one of the cool things about the series now is, like, there's all these different elements that are all converging together. I'm just sad there's only a couple more episodes.
Oh, that's true, because I was kind of like, I felt like they were setting up that young two kids kind of as being new members of the Destiny, because they're like descendants of Scott, and at least they look like it. They look like direct descendants of Scott. I was like, that's your little brother, Scott, or something? I really think that those guys would be an interesting addition to the crew. I really like them. But it's really devastating.
I think so.
When they get to the planet, like the original capital city that their other versions of themselves established, and they've got all these records, like all these keynote records of things that the other versions of themselves said and speeches and all, you know, watching themselves give birth to other, you know, it's like all that stuff was great.
Yeah.
I thought this is one of the best episodes they've had in a while.
And what I really liked was the very end when they go back to their home planet or their established home planet, and they think that a nuclear war has happened because it sounded like that's what everything was leading up to, and then they find out, no, it was actually just a natural disaster.
Right.
I'm like, that was a really cool kind of twist.
Yeah, because it was a volcano, right? Yeah, a volcano erupted and basically buried the city and everybody died. But that means that the city's intact. So now they actually have a place to move the civilization, but I'm sure there's going to be a wrinkle in that.
Well, the preview for next week shows them, like...
Say it again.
The preview for next week...
Technically, if it's a volcano, it should be covered in ash, but, you know, whatever.
Well, it is covered in ash. Yeah, it showed it's covered in ash.
And the air is, like, probably unbreathable, but hey.
Well, we don't know how long ago it happened.
It looked pretty recent to me.
It should be sometime in the next 30, in the previous 30 years.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Right, yes.
Okay. So, thumbs up. Episode was great. Can't wait for the next one.
Looking forward to the next one.
Yeah. All right. Next, we want to talk about Glee Returned. And what'd you guys think? Anybody watch it? Or am I the only one still watching Glee?
No, I'm still watching it. I watched it, and all I can say is, does this mean Gwyneth Paltrow is no longer going to be on the show? Because that would be awesome.
Yeah, I do believe... Oh, wow. I was going to say, yes, I do believe it means that, because she broke up with Schuster, so she's gone off to the Wild Blue Yonders. Yes, I believe that is what it says.
Oh, God, because she annoyed me more than any other character on that show at this point.
I have to say
more than Terry?
I have to say her singing has been great.
Her singing is good, but her, like, desperately hip attitude just grated on me so much.
What about, we didn't talk about the Legion of Evil or the Legion of Doom or the League of, it's the League of Evil and the Legion of Doom. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, that was fun.
And it was, one of them was called, he's like, I shall name myself the Pink Dagger.
And that was great. I loved that.
Everyone had a code name. That was fantastic.
This is Sue's anti-Schuster group.
Very good guess. So yeah, but it was the Pink Dagger was great because he was foiled by the fact that he actually liked the song that they were singing. He's like, "Oh, this is my song." Oh yeah, it was all was pretty funny.
Is Sandy a member from the pilot?
Yes, he's the Pink Dagger. Everybody had their mission, and people broke up. Everybody got together. It was pretty. It was like a transition episode, so not a lot happened other than Paltrow left. And we officially, what's the teacher with the cleaning issue?
Emma.
Emma, she officially is divorced from her beau. So now they're going to ramp up the whole Schuster and her thing again.
They're boring together.
We're doing that again.
But whatever. I so don't care about any of the relationships on this show.
Not really, except that I actually think that the whole Brittany and Santana thing could be interesting. But, yeah. But, yeah, the songs were okay. It was a transition episode. I'm actually glad Glee's back, but that's all I gotta say about it. Nothing else.
Yeah. I thought the only thing that was really amusing was their kids' Jeopardy thing that they had on the show. That was fun.
Right, the Brainiac. Some
Brittany actually is answering questions.
Because she's some sort of weird savant.
I thought that was hilarious.
It's like she knows very little about most things, but there are a few subjects she's an encyclopedia about.
Yeah, ask her about cats.
Apparently she knows everything about cats.
One after the other.
Anyway, so next up, we'll talk about Justified. We're counting down. We only have two episodes left, I believe, till the finale. This episode was not exactly transition. Some stuff definitely happened, and someone's laughing.
Stuff happened in an episode. What?
It was pretty good because you know the end of last episode is you got the crew that tried to kill Raylan, and so he's all like who you know going through his list of enemies. And he's got protection, Marshall Service protection, and his ex-wife has protection. So they don't know who the target was. So I thought that was smart because, as we suspected, the target was not him. The target was his ex-wife.
You called that right, Libya, yes.
Yes.
Winona.
Yeah, so...
No, I thought the target was him to get him out of Winona's life.
No. It was the... Remember he was the...
During the shootout?
Yeah, during the shootout, you could see the guys were aiming at her.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was that the soon-to-be ex-husband was mad that she was sleeping with Raylan, so he sent a hitman after her.
No, I don't think that's what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is.
He said.
No, it was because of the deal that he made with the. I can't think of the guy's name.
He made the deal, but he also asked for a hitman to kill his soon to be ex wife. He did both.
When?
They said that in the episode. He very explicitly told Raylan, because Raylan was choking him, and he was like, tell me these aren't the guys that you sent. And he was like, yeah, I was mad that she was sleeping with you. He very clearly said he sent the hitman because she was sleeping with Raylan. But he also did have the deal with the guy, which was why the guy wanted to have clean up the loose ends and take over the business or whatever.
Right.
So it was a nice little wrap-up where Raylan basically sicked these bad guys on that dude. I don't remember that guy's name. So that he is no longer in Winona's life. So now he's on the run.
Right.
Which I think is hilarious, because that guy was an idiot.
That guy can't do anything right.
No, he's an idiot. He's one of those guys who deserves to die because they're stupid. But
again, just another testament to Winona's really bad decision making.
That's true. I'm not going to argue that point. But
the only thing better is if she had gone with him, and then that way
get her off the show. But on the other note, you have Boyd Crowder, who is smart yet stupid, a combination of the two, because I understood what he was doing, but I was like, I don't think he thought this all the way through. Like, I like the fact that he was bold enough in the stick up. Everybody else had on masks. And he was like, my name is Boyd Crowder, and I am the one who is robbing you. So, like, he had no problem showing his face because he knew that Dickie wasn't going to dare to do anything against him, but he didn't think that all
the way through. Yeah, I think he's underestimating Dickie, and that's going to prove to be a problem.
Well, it already proved to be a problem because because Dickie just killed Raylan's stepmom. So I'm like, that Raylan's going to have to kill somebody. Yeah. I got to the end of that episode.
And that's a good way to bring Raylan into this.
Well, my whole thing is, I was like, okay, if Dickie kills Raylan's father, Raylan's going to be like, oh, well, you know, he deserved it. But
yeah, you kill her, Raylan's going to be like, kill them all.
And especially because it was a Bennett that did it. Right. I was like, they just took the lid off of that whole feud. Family feud.
It's like we were saying a couple weeks ago, you don't kill somebody everybody hates, you kill somebody everybody loves.
Exactly. And so everybody, I mean, I like her. She was great. She was the one keeping the peace. And because Dickie killed her, now I don't know if he intended to kill her. I don't think he thought that through. That's the thing about Dickie. He's impulsive. And you say that Boyd underestimated him, but it's not so much he underestimated him, it's that Dickie is dumber than Boyd even thought, because that's a stupid move on Dickie's part.
Yeah, because, but that's still underestimating him, but in a different way.
Right, like, he underestimated his stupidity, yes.
Because this Dickie is unpredictable.
Right.
Which is going to be Boyd's downfall, because Boyd is very much a planner.
Well, now's the problem is, how much is Raylan going to blame Boyd for her getting killed?
Oh, he's going to blame him entirely for it.
Well, I don't know if it's entirely to where I have to kill you entirely, but yeah, that's not going to be good. Because they were getting to be where they were almost friends and respected each other.
They're frenemies,
right? Now, all bets are off, man. That's uncool.
The thing is, with Dickie,
because, like it or not, Boyd is responsible for what happened, and Raylan's not going to let him forget that.
Exactly. Nope. What were you going to say, Ronnie?
I was going to say, from Dickie's point of view, is like, he's losing everything, and the only person he could identify that he could do something with was Raylan's father because of the limp, you know, when everything went down.
I know.
And so that's why, you know, Dickie, you know, went, you know, to her place, because that's the only thing he could think of to do. So he's desperate as well.
I'm not arguing his desperation. I'm just arguing his stupidity. That's all.
Well, this is true.
Let's also talk a little bit more about stupidity. His mother was very good friends with Helen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so now she's had one son who almost killed the girl. She has another son who's now killed an extremely close friend of hers. How she is going to react is going to be, to me, more interesting than Raylan.
I wouldn't be surprised if Mags is the one who takes Dickie out.
Well, I think she's going to wipe her hands. I don't think she can actually kill her son, but I think she's going to wipe her hands of him. She's gonna be like,
I disagree. I feel like they're gonna Godfather 3 Megs. Like, she's trying to get out, but Dickie keeps pulling her back in.
And so she's gonna have to kill him?
She's gonna have to do something. She can't let this stand.
She basically hinted in the previous episode that she would not have a problem taking that if the dead son, the son that Raylan had killed,
Coover.
If he had harmed the girl, that she would have taken him out.
Right.
So yeah. Dickie's already been cut out. Right. So I don't think Max will have any problem.
I think he's gonna mistakenly think that she'll protect him.
She's not gonna protect him.
Nah.
She already said you're not no kin of mine.
Yeah, he's in a world of hurt right about now. And he had to kill his two henchmen. I was like, you only have three henchmen and you killed two of them? And I understood why he did that, because he wanted to show that he had to be feared. I get it. But, yeah.
It's just interesting to see Jeremy Davies play this role, because it is so unlike his character on Lost.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, that's the sign of a great actor.
Yeah, it's impressive. So, Justified, I cannot wait for the last two episodes. They will be very, very explosive. And I feel like Raylan's on the very edge of no longer being a marshal, too, because he's totally lost Arch's respect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, and now he's losing the respect of his fellow marshals. Like, that other marshal's like, where'd you go? Never mind, don't tell me. Like, he doesn't even want to know.
Right.
But I love the scenes between the two marshals, because the other one, he's just like, you know, dude, just don't cut me out, you know? And when he left him in the convenience store with the ice cream and everything else, that was cute.
Yeah, but now those guys, if you're supposed to work with somebody and they don't respect you, because he believed him.
That's a real problem.
That's a problem, because he was like, he's like, trust me, you go to sleep and I'll take watch. And so he trusted him to take watch. And he wakes up and Raylan's gone. So nobody was watching the house. Nobody was on guard duty, and they all could have been killed.
Right.
You know, so that was uncool.
That's true.
So yeah, he's lost that marshal's respect too, I think. And so that's going to be problematic. Anyway.
And it's all for love of a woman, which I think is a very sick love. The idea that he's going back to Winona, that she stole and he's okay with it. That she can literally do no wrong in his eyes.
Well, no.
No.
He knows that she's wrong.
He knows she's...
But still isn't doing anything about it. He's not breaking off with her because of it. He adores her. No,
that's not entirely true. He basically, once he realized that Art knew what he did, and he realized that he had no future with the Marshals, he was kind of like, well, I might as well be with Winona. That was pretty much his reaction. He's told her she was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
He straight up told her that he couldn't sleep in the same bed with her for a while. So it's not, he doesn't have glassy, rosy colored glasses on with her. He understands. But
he does. But he'll still pick her first, and that's a sign of a sick relationship.
Well,
oh, absolutely. It's definitely a toxic relationship, and it's not really going to end well.
I wouldn't say it's a sick relationship. It's just not a healthy relationship.
Yeah, there you go. I'll go with that.
There's this odd codependence here.
The next show we want to talk about is 30 Rock. And this week's episode was the 100th episode, and it was a full, technically an hour, even though it was 45 minutes. And we have a diverse opinions on the quality of the episode. I personally thought that it was funny. I mean, the beginning of it I thought was a little weak with all the flashbacks, but then you find out that the flashbacks are actually gas-induced and there's all these hallucinations going on, and I actually like the hallucinations. And
I thought the gas was an interesting and fun way to do a clip show, as opposed to like everybody just sort of wistfully for no good reason start reminiscing. It's like, oh wait, this is because we're all being affected by this gas in the building.
Right. And I thought that was all pretty good, and especially the fact that Jack started having visions of his sideways Jack. Very nice Lost reference.
Yeah.
So it was sideways Jack. There was
future Jack.
There was past future, Jack.
Past Jack.
And then there was future Jack, who looked like he was out of the set of Tron. But I thought that all that was pretty good. Like, all the Jack stuff I thought was great. And I like the line where he's like, why are you guys wearing tuxedos? And they're like, it's after 6 p.m. What are we, farmers?
We're farmers?
I might be the only dissenting opinion. I did not dig it. It was a half hour episode stretched out to an hour. If you're gonna do clip shows, if you want to do clips, do clips. If you want to do, you know, cool, fun visions, do that. But mixing the two together and the plot with Tracy was just extremely repetitive. Yeah, you know, I'm trying to get back to my old bad boy self, and it was the same story beat played over and over and over.
I never liked Tracy, no matter what he's doing, so that didn't affect my opinion one way or the other.
And Jenna's search about the baby thing, it's like, ugh, didn't care.
I don't like Jenna either, though I have to say her transgender impersonator guy.
Oh, that's girl, just
it's just weird.
I thought we had put that story element to bed. It was just creepy.
Well, now she wants to have a child with him, and then I liked her hysterical pregnancy that mysteriously went away. I thought that was funny.
I just thought if it had been a half an hour long, it would have been a mediocre episode. Stretched out to an hour, I thought it was a sign that they are shark jumping 101.
Nah, I still like the I like the Jack Donaghy stuff, and I like the Dennis coming back, and
I like Dennis coming back. I like the alternate Jacks.
I have to say I liked Michael Keaton's part in this as the maintenance guy,
as the obvious red shirt.
I just thought that was weird. It was like, hey, that's Michael Keaton.
Well, I was like, why is Batman doing that?
Why is Batman doing maintenance in 30 Rock?
I did think the same thing. I was like, oh, it's Batman. Why does he have a wrench?
It just seemed like this is a fifth season show running out of creative steam.
I have to say, though, I love that speech where Jack's on the roof and he's talking to Tracy and he's explaining to him how to lose his reputation. He's like, all you have to do is television, because then nobody cares about all the stuff. And he's basically listing his own work.
Right.
That was clever.
So he's listing all the things that he's done, and it's like it's all ruined as soon as you come to television. And then we should say
not the stuff that Jack Donaghy's done, the stuff that Alec Baldwin has done.
It's great. And then you see at the end where Tom Hanks gets on the phone. He's like, take him off the A-list. Take him off the. He's like, well, who has a list? I know Pitt has a list. I don't have his. It's like,
wake him up.
Yeah, this is so great.
That was great. But what killed me was at the end, he starts singing the Bosom Buddies.
That was brilliant. That was brilliant, and probably cost them, you know, like several thousand dollars.
I didn't recognize what he was singing. Oh, because I never watched
that. That was the theme song of Bosom Buddies.
I know he was on television.
Which is also a Billy Joel song.
Yep.
Yeah, which I do realize that he comes from television. I get that, but I didn't recognize the song. But yeah, all that was pretty funny. And I was like, is he knitting? What is he doing? It's like, that's
he was knitting.
He was knitting.
He was hooking a rug.
Say that again?
What?
He was hooking a rug.
Thank you. Yeah, he was not knitting. He was actually making some sort of hook thingy, whatever that was. But anyway, I thought the episode was amusing, so I liked it. Moving on. Next thing we want to talk about is Vampire Diaries. And it was one of the biggest episodes, as you can tell by the name. Whenever they name an episode after a character that you're like, who's this guy? We can't wait to meet this guy. And then they name the episode after him. Gold.
Klaus.
Yeah, Klaus.
I have to say, I was expecting them to cast someone that I recognized, and they didn't. I have never seen that actor before in my life, but
I kind of like it better that way.
I have to say, he was good.
I like it better too, yeah.
He was good. He was he embodied everything I thought about Klaus. He was creepy. He was charming. He was all of that. So, good casting.
I love the parallels they're setting up between Klaus and Elijah and Damon and Stefan.
At first, I was annoyed by it. Like, as soon as they said they were brothers, I was like, really? We already have brothers. But as soon as they said that all the originals are actually from the same family, then I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know,
also that the curse is not a curse for all werewolves and vampires. It's only for Klaus.
Right.
Can I just step in here? Because I'm not like a big supernatural person anyway. But the fact that now that they're combining the vampires and the werewolves, when I heard that, it's like, okay, look, people, you know, it's like, because every week they reveal something and change something anyway. And so I was just blown away when now Klaus is both. Come on.
Is that a come on good or come on bad?
I was sort of like, really? When they said that, I'm like, I don't know about that, but.
When they said that, my first thought was Underworld. My first thought was Underworld. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute, we did this already.
Exactly.
And I did think that, and so I was kind of annoyed by that reveal, because I actually thought it was more interesting if everyone had something at stake. But now that we know it's only that Klaus has something at stake, I'm like, eh. However, I will say that just the one-on-one conversation with Elena and Klaus, not Klaus, Elena and Elijah was really good. And the flashbacks, seeing him, that he got played by Katarina too. I was like, good Lord, woman.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty great. And it also divided two brothers again. I was like, all right. But I like the fact that Elijah has totally learned his lesson. He's like, yeah, not moved at all. But yeah, I really thought that there was a lot of exposition.
The flashback episodes always tend to be.
Yeah, but it was still some good exposition. The only thing I did call foul on a little bit was Klaus being a mix between vampire and werewolf. I'm like, really? That's your reveal?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where they kind of lost me a little bit, but
I was a little disappointed in that. But I still think that Klaus is a great villain. I still think that figuring out how the heck they're going to kill him without killing Bonnie, if that's possible, I want to see. So all of that is pretty cool. Like, and of course, Damon doesn't like any of this and is going to throw a wrench in everybody's plan.
Right, because that's what Damon does best.
Yes, and I want to see that. So all the other stuff I think is pretty good. That was the only thing I was disappointed in. Other than that, I thought it was a great episode.
Well, I didn't see Underworld, so I didn't. This is the first time I've heard of the combination. But it hasn't been explained yet, has it, about exactly what the doppelganger does?
No, they haven't. I swear to God. Like, they better friggin' tell me what the heck a doppelganger is.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to.
Yeah, but they have to. They've been hanging this over us for like 2 seasons, and we still don't know.
Just this season.
Well, we're coming up on the finale pretty soon, so I'm hoping we get a big reveal.
Something, please. Because I actually have this weird feeling that Katarina was not the first doppelganger. Like, I want them to reveal there was one before her.
Yeah.
Like, I'm waiting for that.
Yeah.
Well, just the fact that they call it the Petrova doppelganger.
Like, there's more than one.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I want that. I'm waiting for that reveal. Because they knew who she was when they grabbed her the first time.
For some reason, when we found out that Klaus is also a werewolf, it reminded me of Back to Buffy when they're trying to kill Glory season 5.
And that Glory is Ben and Ben is Glory?
Well, that they said that Glory is not a demon, she's a god.
Right.
And everybody's like, uh-oh.
Right. Well, they were trying to get you to go for that emotion, but it didn't work. I was just kind of annoyed. Because, werewolves in this universe are not that impressive.
Yeah.
So
they're really not.
I was like, really? Why do you want to be a werewolf too, dude? Being a vampire in the original is way more awesome. So, yeah. But anyway, still good episode. Can't wait for what's coming up next. All right, so the next thing we want to talk about is Supernatural. And we went all West style.
Yeah. Went all Star Trek 4.
because they cribbed so much from Back to the Future in this.
I love Bobby's comment. I only watched Deep Space Nine.
Really?
I just when I thought Bobby could not be more awesome when he said that, I was like, I love you forever.
But I love Dean's riposte of, I don't even know you people anymore.
It was all great references. And then I was like, my first thought was, you watch Star Trek? Like, Dean? Really? Like, I didn't see that coming. And I just thought that was so great. Like, all the references. And then when Bobby makes a reference about, you know, we got to get them out of Deadwood. I was like, no!
I died. That was awesome.
The whole show was great. I mean, I loved even the opening credits, a la Bonanza.
Oh, the Bonanza. That was
fantastic.
Great.
That just had me rolling. I love that.
Everything. I like how they do 15 minutes ago, but what, 150
years later. All that stuff was good. It was like they really made an excellent episode this time. I mean, as far as the overall arc, it helped a little because now we have the ashes and everything. And they did pull the complete – that was from Back to the Future where they get the package – they get the package from the past and everything, and I was like...
Even with the delivery guy talking about we've got a bet going.
Right, everything was straight out of Back to the Future. That was great. And I did like when they finally meet Samuel Colt. Samuel Colt is like, you tell me you're a giant from the future. I was rolling. I was like, oh, that's great. Because well, he is freakishly okay. tall.
I have one qualm with that, and that is that when Sam tells him that his name is Sam Winchester, Colt says nothing about, wait, you're the rifle guy who's been stealing my business?
Yeah, because I thought he was going to recognize the Winchester name, too.
Yeah.
Me, too. I was hoping for some recognition of Winchester.
Yeah.
And the one qualm is, okay, you built the 150-mile-wide Devil's Gate. Why don't you live inside of it? Instead of living outside of it so that demons can show up on your doorstep.
Well, isn't it that it's not completed at this point? So it really wouldn't make a difference.
No, it was because the demons came because they wanted him to open it. Remember? That's why the demons showed up. They were like, we need you to open the Devil's Gate.
That's a good point, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was living outside.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, if I build a 150-mile Devil's Gate, I'm going to live inside of it. Anyway, the...
But yeah, it was a great episode, and it had great lines all the way through it. I mean, I love the bit of you know, I love your blanket.
And of course, it was the telegram from Mongo.
Oh, yeah. Candygram. Candygram from Mongo.
Candygram from Mongo.
But have you also noticed the
cat? That line killed me.
Marcia, go ahead.
But have you noticed the cat storyline now? All of a sudden, he's doing something wrong.
Oh,
we
yeah.
don't know what it is, but his people are coming after him.
Well, what I have to say, though, the very first thing when they were like, you have a dirty secret, and I was like, you mean Dean? Like, I had that quick moment where I wasn't sure what they were talking about. And my mind went to a very
You've been reading too much slash fiction.
Hey, last week's episode, they said, you know, I'm not the angel that's in love with you. And I was like, is that it? And I was kind of like, is that his dark secret? So I had that, I thought that for a second, and I was like, oh, no, it's probably not that. Not worth killing him for, at least. So obviously he's been doing something he's not supposed to do, and I'm sure they'll reveal that to us later. And the fact that he's lying to the boys, too, because he doesn't want them to know what he's doing.
Yeah.
So that doesn't bode well for whatever he's doing.
Also, do you remember the episode where they talked about the Titanic and how about all those souls?
That's what I was thinking. This has to do with him trying to get a whole bunch of souls.
Right, of course.
Well, to build an army.
Obviously that's what it is. But I do like the fact that when he showed up at Bobby's and he's bleeding all over the place, he puts a signal on, and Bobby is like watching this, and he only has one question. He's like, are we fighting or are we running? He's like, keep it simple. That's all I need to know. Mm-hmm. Fighting or running. And I was like, that's the kind of friend I need. I need people not that I'm like running from anyone or anyone, but I like the simplicity of that.
Yeah.
I love Bobby's description of getting a solenectomy.
It's like, at least it wasn't for
excuse me, a solenoscopy.
Solenoscopy. Yes, that was great. He made up a name for it.
Yeah. Which was just had a terrible mental image.
But obviously, when they showed that lets you know that the angels can draw powers from souls. So obviously, their whole big plan is gather up souls to use as a power source.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which
very Matrix-y.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Use humans as batteries. Good point.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we have like 3 or 4 more episodes of Supernatural, but thumbs up. Cannot wait where this is going. All right, next thing we want to talk about is Fringe.
And good episode.
Called 6:02 a.m. The universes are about to collide.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think?
Loved it. That's all I got to say. I loved it. I love this show. I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Very, very surprising, too. I was not expecting to have that that happened to Peter.
Oh yeah, I was like,
the machine reject him.
Yeah,
that was very surprising. That was not expecting at all.
I actually, my first thought was when he touches it and he flies across the room. I was like, well, that was anticlimactic because I was expecting something, you know, you glow or whatever. And I was like, Huh, I didn't see that coming.
I wonder if that has something to do with Walternate's rejection of Peter. I mean, he's mad that Peter didn't choose him.
No, it has to do with the fact that they're using the baby blood in the other version. Yeah. That's what it has to do with.
Like, that's the version of Peter that it's using, and it's rejecting everything else.
Right.
So real Peter is what it's defending itself from. And I think that, you know, it's just going to keep rejecting anything beyond that point. So that's where we are.
That still kind of doesn't track to, because that's, the baby still has Peter's DNA.
Right, but remember they said
as they went to great lengths at the beginning to say everything except Peter's DNA was carefully extracted out. So what the machine is recognizing is essentially Peter.
Yeah, except that it doesn't have all his DNA, remember? Because the baby...
They said it's only part of it, but enough for the machine to recognize it.
Right, and so the real Peter...
It doesn't have to be perfect, clearly.
Obviously, yeah. So that reveal was pretty good. And, oh, and the guy, the bowling alley dude, what... I don't know his name.
Samuel or something.
Yeah, he has all these crazy devices. Sam Weiss. Yeah, he has all these crazy devices that reveal something that he's doing calculations on that we don't know what the heck he's doing.
Now, do we know if he is from the other side?
We have no idea. He's mystery guy. We know nothing about him.
He's just mystery bowling therapist.
He's just basically, because obviously he's got one of those windows, because he had the window so he could see the other universe. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he did a calculation that equals zero, so we know that, but that we don't know what that means.
Which means end of the world.
I'm going to assume that. So his whole thing is he's got a plan. We don't know what that plan is, but what's funny is that even in the alternate universe, the plan's not actually going away according, because they figured that if they destroyed the other world, it would fix theirs, but that's not what's happening. So they're not sure what the heck to do either. So, because he's like, Walternate's won, and then they show Walternate, he's like, it's not working. So obviously something else is going on, and I wonder. I'm assuming we're going to see the watch. What they call the Watchers? What do they call
the Observers?
Observers.
I'm waiting for the Observers to show up at this point, because we are now at war between the worlds.
Yeah. Well, clearly the Observers are setting this up very specifically. I mean, they wanted Walter to be able to make the sacrifice to put Peter in the machine. That's important to them for some reason. And I think it's because they sense that whatever Walternet is doing, it's going to lead to the destruction of one and possibly both worlds.
Right.
So what they want to do is to prevent that from happening. And their idea involved putting Peter in the machine. Clearly, there's a problem with that now.
Right. Ronnie, did you have any thoughts?
Actually, no. I'm behind on Fringe.
Catch up.
All right.
So we've just spoiled everything for you. Sorry.
I'm trying not to listen.
La la la.
All right.
What
are
you talking about?
I like the fact that they established that after the events of previous episodes that the real Peter and Peter and the real Olivia are indeed hooking up.
Oh, right. Yeah. And her awkward scene in the hallway with Walter.
That was priceless.
They were like, well, it's Tuesday. I was like, what?
Naked Tuesdays at the Bishop House.
I liked how she very studiously kept her eyes up. She's like, yes, Walter, how are you? As I look at the ceiling.
And Walter's totally oblivious. He's like, oh, I'm making frittatas. I'll make another one for you.
It can get very cold in the house. Yes, yes, I see.
That was fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, they went to the depressing thing, but then I like how Broyles is becoming... They're giving Broyles more to do, like, emotionally.
I just hope it's that so they can kill him.
That's no, they're not killing Broyles.
I hope not.
But they're.
Well, they've already killed him once. They don't need to do it again.
That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, Astrid got to rock again. I love Astrid.
Astrid's awesome. Yes.
Okay, so everything is cranking up. I have no idea where they're going at this point, which is good.
Which I love.
Yeah, I have no clue what's happening next. All right, so next show we want to talk about is the season premiere of Doctor Who.
Yay!
I'm actually wearing my Who shirt, but anyway. So we kick off the new season and kill the Doctor in the first 5 minutes. Brilliant!
Yes.
The end. Everyone go home. Because I was like, I remember when I was watching that, I was like, well, that was unexpected. I have to say, I really didn't see them killing the Doctor right out of the gate coming at all.
Well, except that they were saying there was going to be a death of a major character at the very beginning of the show, and they kept advertising that. And I thought, well, you know, who else are they going to do that people would get all excited about?
I never saw that advertisement.
Neither did I.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't.
Is this the first time you've actually watched shows live in the U.S.?
Possibly. I have no idea what you're talking about. But,
Of course I watch it live in the U.S.
There was a New York Times article this weekend about that.
That what?
About how BBC America closed the gap between months to weeks to the same day.
Yeah, because...
To stop people from torrenting episodes.
But it's still hours
later.
Because
that's the only way we have of watching that here.
Right.
Only possible means.
But, I only watch the American broadcast because I love what they have done with the opening.
Oh my God, what the heck? What? Oh, we got a freaking previously.
No, you got a saga set.
No.
You got a saga set.
We got the Amy Pond opening narration, which is like...
Someone shoot me. I was appalled.
Was that horrible? I was watching that and I was literally screaming at the screen, what the hell is that?
BBC America is hoping that this is going to be a good starting place for new viewers.
Yeah.
Chase away all the old ones, but
you just better hope that that's not on every week.
We're off topic. We're supposed to be talking about the episode. Let's go back to the episode and I'll be in a calmer place. Thank you.
Okay. Mark Shepard, great casting.
Did you notice that it was his dad playing the older version of him?
Was that?
I did.
That was Morgan Shepard. His.
Oh, father. I didn't know that at all.
Yep.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
That is pretty cool. And
they both did the same, not quite believable American accent.
They worked
on that really hard together too to get that coordinated.
How about the Black Secret Service agent?
Oh my God, he was awful. He was awful.
That actually bugged me because I'm sorry. In the Nixon White House during the Hoover years, that would never have happened.
Oh, a Black Secret Service guy. I was just mad at his faux American accent. That was the worst American accent I've heard in a long time.
It's like, just if you come to America, why not hire local?
Well, they weren't shooting that scene in America.
Oh, they didn't shoot that one in America.
No, all the desert stuff was in America, but the White House stuff was.
But they still had British actors playing the Americans.
Yes, that's true. But
in fact, you know, people want to get a hold of the Confidential, which is really interesting. They show how that whole thing was done.
Who do you think is in the freaking astronaut suit? Not at the end, because, by the way, I've seen this maneuver pulled on Babylon 5 where they have somebody running around in a space suit and someone does something and then you're like, they do the magic, they do the who's in the spacesuit thing in one scene.
That was Sinclair. Right?
Not all the time. Sometimes it was DeLynn, sometimes it was Sinclair, and sometimes it was Sheridan.
Okay.
So they did the whole magic who's in the suit thing. And so I'm calling that they're doing that on this as well, because when we see who's in the suit at the end, it's the little girl. But I seriously doubt the little girl shot him at the beginning.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, I have my theory, but I don't know. Do we want to speculate on this and create possible retroactive spoilers?
It's not a spoiler.
It's not a spoiler if you have no knowledge.
I mean, because I have theories, too.
Yeah.
We all do.
Well, my theory is that the little girl is River.
My theory is that the girl in the spacesuit is River at the end, or at the beginning, yes. I can see your point. Because I thought it was... Oh, that's brilliant. Okay, your theory works. Your theory works in conjunction with my theory, but yours works better. Because I was thinking that it was River. I thought that River's the one who kills him.
At the beginning?
At the beginning, in the suit. Yeah. I think it's River's the one that kills him at the beginning. Right. But I didn't think that it was River as a little girl. But then I was like, when she's talking about her past, that as a little girl she meets a guy who knows everything about her. And I was like, you're right, that's River. Yes.
And the one thing that that sort of scared me, because like I sort of thought about this while I was watching it the second time around, was what if Amy is pregnant with River?
What?
What?
No.
That's crazy talk.
That's creepy. No, that doesn't work. One, because River is from the 51st century. River's from the 51st century.
Who's to say that Amy doesn't give birth to her kid in the 51st century and just leave her there?
Because why would she do that?
Because it's Amy's
mom. Talk about a bad mother.
Seriously. Yes, please no, because that would take away all of River's coolness.
I agree, and I'm hoping that's not the case.
Yes, let's not do that. First of all, I'm annoyed that she's pregnant anyway. It annoys the crap out of me. And if they make River Song, Amy Pond, oh, the guy, their names are similar now, because Pond and River. Oh,
Pond
God.
And River.
That's what I was thinking. Well,
it seemed like they went out of their way to show both of them in the same frame with similarly colored hair. So.
Oh, please, no! I love River Song.
I don't want to go there at all.
Yeah.
I speculated on one of the largest Doctor Who Yahoo groups, and everyone's like, wow, that actually makes sense. I think she's the daughter of Captain Jack. The 51st century, the time, he already said he was pregnant once before. He's really been pregnant three times.
See, that would be cooler.
I
would
want that too.
If the River's Captain
Jack.
No,
it's Amy Pond. No.
I still don't want to go there. Please. But what I did is I think the reason that they did the opening the way they did, and God willing, not next week, is that just like she met the Doctor when she was around, what, seven? Okay, River was the same thing. She ended up meeting the Doctor when she was very young. However, that was nearer to the end of his life.
Right.
So they've both been raised by memories of adventures with the Doctor in different ways. So I think that's how they are bound, and that's why they had the beginning. My concern right now for the show is that they're going to make it too much for the Americans, and because they're being very choppy. But someone I know who actually saw episode two, he went to a special gathering in England, says that episode two will make episode one not hurt.
Okay.
So as much as we're upset and he swears.
I know I can see your point, but they went really wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey with this. Yeah. So I don't know if that's really the best way to bring in new audiences.
Right. You had to be paying attention, and you had to understand time travel, and you had to understand Doctor Who, actually, for this to even work.
Very much.
Yeah.
Because as a new viewer, who the heck is River Song? Why is she in prison? What the heck is going on?
Well, but they brought up some of those questions during the episode, though.
I don't think that they're doing that. The whole goal of this is bringing in new people. What they're trying to do is bring in our eyeballs, those of us who have been watching it thanks to the Friends. They're trying to get those eyeballs to actually see it while there's a commercial. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to pull people in that way. I don't think it's to get new people. I think it's to be able to get them in a way that they can actually say to the advertisers, see all these eyeballs?
Well, that's true. To get us to action. Yeah. I did actually watch it on, for the first-ish time, I did actually watch it on BBC America.
I watched it too because I wanted to give them my eyeballs.
Yeah.
But I also got my friend in England's version.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You know, and really that's the only way to watch it because it was so chopped up from all the stupid advertisements.
It didn't work. And because the BBC doesn't really have commercials in there, there was no break point.
Let's talk about the monsters in the bathroom.
Oh! Yes.
That was crazy.
Those are some creepy aliens.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So I'm looking at you. I'm terrified. I turn my head away, and now I don't remember anything.
You forget about you.
Yes.
That is a brilliant.
Of course, then you risk the loop that one woman in the bathroom starts getting into, which is she turns away and Amy says, "Don't look behind you." And she's like, "Look at what? Oh my God!
Is that a Star Trek mask?"
That was hilarious.
What?
I mean, I have to give Moffat credit. He is so good at creating just super creepy villains.
Yeah, those guys are pretty good. Because especially when Rory looks out the door and he sees them and he's freaking out. And he starts to turn back to tell River what's going on. And then by the time he turns back, he's like, "Oh, everything's fine." And I'm like, "They're behind you!"
What I'd like to know is, did Amy's camera phone take a picture of
it? Did
okay
it yeah it did she but she forgets to look at it.
Yeah, she does. It doesn't do her any good because she doesn't know it's there.
Right
And it's funny how like the guy, like when she pulled out the when she had her cell phone, "What's that? It's my phone," you know, in the 60s, huh?
And he doesn't even blink. Seriously, come on. He's Secret Service. He should be checking.
He just experienced a blue box coming out of nowhere in the middle of the Oval Office. So the fact that she's got a little phone in her pocket shouldn't faze him at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought I was like, Secret Service should have patted them down regardless. They should have found that phone.
But you know, it was the 60s. Security was a little bit looser then.
I don't think so. But anyway, I thought the episode was good. It left, what was the cliffhanger? It left us on a cliffhanger. Oh, Amy shoots the girl.
Right. Yeah, she shoots the kid, and Rory and River are being attacked down in the basement. And that's where we left it.
Okay, this may be a nitpick, but how many alien civilizations have been here
for
the whole time?
I know.
I've seen that plot line before. It's like, they've always been here.
Yeah, so they have tunnels. It's congruent to the other tunnels of the alien. Remember the Hungry Earth from last season?
It's like we've had the Rachnos, the Silurians. Like, how many different aliens are on this planet that we don't know about?
They're all living underground in interconnected tunnels that are all connected to each other.
And how do they not
it's
bump
really
into each
crowded
other?
Under there. It really is.
Yeah.
Look, but if you look at that main room, it's similar to the room in The Lodger.
Yeah, I noticed that right away.
Yeah, I was like, why are they on a spaceship?
That's what I was thinking.
So, yeah. All right. I think that's about it. Anybody have any final comments?
I am definitely looking forward to next week. And could someone please teach Alex Kingston how to shoot a gun? I'm sorry. I love her. But when she was taking shots at the astronaut, it was painful to watch.
Well, at least she probably missed.
Yeah, she was missing on purpose.
But that was like... She missed. Yeah, well, that was like my... The reveal for me was that's what told me that the little girl was River, because she's shooting directly at it, totally misses, and she goes, "Of course not." Like, she knew because she'd already done it.
Hmm. Oh, wait. Huh? Oh. I see what you... Okay,
because this is her past self having killed the doctor, because what we're seeing is a River who has already killed the doctor.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean, because that's why she's in prison.
Yeah, because she knew that she got away, so she's taking shots, but she knows that she's not going to hit her.
Right. You're right. Okay, I'm with you on that. That's why I knew it was River 2, sort of. But anyway, okay, we're wrapping up. So, if you have any feedback or comments, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at tvcampfire, and we're on Facebook. And we will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.